Your agency is thinking and talking and doing something about cloud computing. Every agency is. And one of the agencies on the edge of that is the General Services Administration, and a couple of the key players, GSA, that are working on cloud matters are my guest for hour number one today. Dave McClure is the Associate Administrator in the Office of Citizen Services and Innovative Technologies at GSA. Dave, great to see you again.
Always a pleasure to be here.
You may remember Dave from such organizations as Gartner and the Government Accountability Office. And I think Gartner was, when you were with Gartner, was the last time you were here.
I think so.
It's been a while.
It has.
So congratulations on the work that you're doing at GSA and the success you're having there. Your nickname should be Road Warrior,
because
it seems like every 10 minutes I'm getting an email from somebody saying, come here, Dave McClure, talk about cloud computing. So it's great to have you here to talk about it with us today.
Thanks, Francis.
And we're going to talk about some of the practical applications of the cloud and what it means for your agency. Taking Dave's picture right now.
Sorry.
It's okay. It's all right. I do this every day, but not you guys don't get to be on the radio every day. Mary Davey is Assistant Commissioner in the Office of Integrated Technology Services at GSA. It's great to see you, Mary. Thanks for coming in today.
Thank you.
This all started out because you and I are friends on Facebook, yeah. And you posted a note that you were, I don't remember what it was.
It was spending the day learning about the cloud.
Right.
It was not too long after I took this job.
Uh-huh. And I sent you a message, what are you learning? I would love to have you come on and talk about it. And you were a little bashful at first.
I was, because as I told them, you know, I don't want to come talk about something I don't really know about. So since then, I've been spending a lot of time learning about the cloud.
Well, but that's part of the reason that I want you to come on and talk about it, though, because there are a lot of people at agencies that are in the same position that you're in. We were talking before we went on the air that IT folks pretty much have it nailed down from the sound of it. They are telling me, and vendors are telling me, mm-hmm. that the IT professionals at agencies are getting a really solid grip on what they need to know about cloud computing and moving forward into the cloud. But I think it's instructive for folks who are not immersed in IT every single day, that's not their portfolio, to understand what the possibilities are and how it might actually help me do my job at mm-hmm. some point in time. What will be different about how I conduct my everyday business. So that's why I wanted to have you here. Dave, talk about the timeline that the agency has been on when it comes to the cloud and maybe be a little more specific about what the cloud means to actually meeting the mission. Yeah. Of an agency.
Yeah, well, you know, GSA is a natural agency to be sort of in a government-wide leadership role in the cloud area, because we do provide contract vehicles for government-wide use. We support a lot of government-wide activities in the IT field. So it's a natural fit for GSA to be a player at the table. So we have been sort of partnering with Vivek and Anish Chopra to come up with the government-wide strategy and some of the steps that have been taken to put more cloud capabilities into the government.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been an exciting time. I've been, you know, at this about 18 months or so, and it's really starting to accelerate this year. I think we're moving away from just talking about cloud to actually putting cloud solutions in place. And
mm-hmm.
I think you'll see a lot more of it as we go into this year
mm-hmm.
Further, too.
It seems that for a long time, it was like Baskin-Robbins. There were
yeah.
32 flavors of cloud, and people couldn't figure out what was what. That's kind of settled down now, it seems like.
It has. I mean, there's still definitional issues, and everybody has their own understanding of cloud, but I don't think everybody's hung up on that. It's kind of back up and say, I understand there are private clouds, public clouds, hybrid clouds. There's different kinds of solutions that you can go into cloud environments. A CIO has just got to step back and make sense of that and say, okay, what makes sense for me to move my environment into based on mission need or service delivery needs or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It's like any other technology decision. There's nothing mystical about this.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what CIOs have to focus on.
But wasn't that part of the problem, you think, for a while? Folks made it seem like there was some big mystery and this was really confusing, and the reality of it was it wasn't that at all.
Yeah. It was a dialogue about moving from owning things to actually sort of renting or leasing things,
mm-hmm.
because cloud is about service provisioning. It's getting out of the infrastructure business. It's getting out of building applications or managing the license aspect of applications to just buying services. And that's a huge culture shift for government, particularly large IT organizations where they got to have their hands on the assets that they own. And that's what's been difficult, I think, to sink in.
The training that you were talking about, Mary, when we first started this conversation on Facebook, was that because you were new in your job, or was that because you were starting to learn about the cloud for the first time for your job? Or a combination of both?
It was both. And when I learned that our office in ITS was sort of a co-program manager with Dave's office on implementing cloud solutions for government, you know, that was obviously one of the things I wanted to learn about was, okay, what is our responsibility on this, and what does it mean to be, you know, a service line manager or a service line planner, which is sort of how we've talked about our responsibilities with this. So I was just trying to, number one, understand what does it mean when we say we're going to put in place solutions for agencies to help them take advantage of cloud services. And so the first thing you do is you learn how those things are defined and, you know, what kind of buckets they go into, like infrastructure, platform, and software. And I think when you guys were talking about the mystical aspect, if you really think about it, and we've had these conversations, Dave talked about it this morning at the Coalition Breakfast, is this is really not new. I think there's maybe a new, you know, sort of way that we are talking about it and have associated with something called cloud. But what it really means in what's been helpful to me and the way that Bill Lewis, our program manager, has explained it to simple folks to help us learn is, you know, if you think about using TurboTax or a product like that to do your taxes, there are some people like me who still go and buy the CD, you know, and so I own it.
I do that,
and
so don't feel bad.
But now you can get it right online. So that's literally a cloud software as a service, you know, solution. And if you start thinking about the things that we use in our everyday life and how we access different things, you know, we don't own all of that. We are relying on someone else to provide us that service, and we're very comfortable there. But it is, I think, a big culture shift in government from the fact that this data, you know, is sensitive, or there's privacy information associated with it, or it's financial data or HR data. How do we protect it, and how would we trust somebody else to manage it for us and then give us the ability to access it when we want it and move it? And so I think that's where we're really starting to think in government, is how to deal with all of those issues around it.
As some of that mystique started to fade away, what did you learn about cloud computing as far as being able to actually apply it to do your job and help other agencies do their jobs that maybe you didn't know or were surprised to know?
I think one of the first things I learned is if you look at what GSA does already in terms of IT, pretty much everything we have in place today, I would say would satisfy about 80% of what an agency could want to do in terms of moving things to the cloud, whether it's, you know, provisioning the hardware, different software applications like we use Salesforce internally at GSA. I know some other agencies do. Dave talked a lot this morning about just agency examples where things have already been moved to the cloud. So that was one of the biggest things to me is, you know, again, it's not new. There are plenty of solutions already in place. It's just a matter, I think, really, if you read the cloud strategy, which I would say is probably a number one thing for someone to do that wants to learn. There's just a lot associated with the planning and, you know, the migration and the managing, which you really need to consider the security aspect. So once you can get through that, then I think there are endless, you know, opportunities. But it's, you know, you got to look at that value chain and figure out where to even start.
Mary Davey and Dave McClure of the General Services Administration in studio with me for the hour on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We'll talk more cloud when the program continues in a moment.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy?
For freedom.
Freedom of religion.
What America stands for.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy? For honor.
Everybody. And watch out for everybody.
Freedom to vote.
Democracy.
Freedom to go outside and play with my kids.
I joined the Navy to serve my country.
Every freedom that we have.
The right to raise our kids in peace.
My little brother.
My wife. My kids.
Our children's children.
The United States Navy.
It's not for ourselves alone that we serve.
Do you know someone who has done something outstanding in the field of human capital management? Nominate them for Federal News Radio's second annual Causey Awards. Together, we'll call attention to what may be a best practice in government. Anyone can be nominated. Career, political, and contractors working in the HR field. The award is named after Mike Causey and his lifelong dedication to the reporting of management and federal pay and benefits issues. To nominate someone for the Causey Awards, go to federalnewsradio.com, search award. Government personnel must continue to achieve mission-critical objectives no matter their work environment. Video conferencing technologies provide a highly effective collaboration solution for federal employees affected by budget cuts, BRAC initiatives, and telework mandates, if they are secure based on open standards and deployable in limited bandwidth environments. Polycom is the first video provider to have an ultimate HD portfolio that is JITC certified, offering real-time face-to-face communication without compromising secure networks or consuming excessive bandwidth. Polycom enables government customers to collaborate over voice and video anywhere, anytime, securely both inside and outside the firewall, offering high-definition video calls at half the bandwidth of other companies. To learn more, visit polycom.com/federal.
The Telework Center arms you with all the information you need to know about teleworking in the federal government. Go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword Polycom.
It's the Geico Gecko with a little hello to all you federal employees. Now, in government, there are people on all points of the political spectrum. But there is one thing that everyone agrees on. Saving money is good. Which brings me to the big news. GEICO now offers discounts to most federal employees GS7 or above. It don't matter if you're a Democrat or an aristocrat, left wing, right wing or a chicken wing. If you're a federal employee GS7 or above, you could be saving a lot of money on your car insurance by switching to GEICO. So no matter if you're blue or red or in my case green. If you're a federal employee GS7 or above, contact GEICO and see how much you could save. Isn't that right, Mike?
Exactly right, my little green friend. Hey, folks, this is Mike Causey. And like the Gecko said, discounts are available for most federal employees, GS7, the equivalent, or above. Just call GEICO at 1-800-947-AUTO, go to geico.com, or visit your local GEICO office to see how much you could save.
Hey there, I'm Christopher Dorabeck. Here's what we're working on for the Dorabeck Insider this afternoon. The armed services, they're too white, too male. That's the assessment of the Military Leadership Diversity Commission. Well, how do you change that? We'll talk to an expert. And President Obama, he said he wanted to close the Guantanamo Bay detention facility. That proved too difficult. We'll talk to a reporter who just returned from that Caribbean naval base about what comes next this afternoon, 3 to 7, on the Dorabeck Insider. It's right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
You're listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Talking about cloud computing today with Dave McClure and Mary Davey of the General Services Administration. There's probably a lot of people that don't know that cloud computing is already, I wouldn't say pervasive, I guess, is mm-hmm. overdoing it a little bit. But there are a lot of applications at various agencies that are already in the cloud, aren't there, Dave?
Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely rooted itself in government already. Over the last year or two, there's different kinds of cloud solutions. Some are infrastructure. So we've had virtualization of servers in data centers been going on for many years. That's a type of cloud computing. We've seen now that many of the agency's public websites are all hosted in cloud environments. Again, that's publicly accessible, available data that's not sensitive or needs to be locked down tight and secure. There's a lot of SaaS, software as a service solutions. You can go to apps.gov, which is run by FAST for us, and you can see hundreds of software solutions where the company actually hosts the application in the cloud. And in some instances, the data that you're actually putting into the application is also hosted in the cloud. So it's there. Some of the CIOs are moving into software testing and development in cloud environments. It takes that out of their production everyday work and allows them to test applications in a very secure but very cost-effective environment. So there's lots of things. I'd advise people to go to info.apps.gov.
Mm-hmm.
We have 40 or 50 very, very lively case studies on different kinds of cloud implementations and actual benefits that have accrued from putting that solution in place.
Mary, I was having a conversation about this with somebody in an agency, not an IT person, and this person said to me, serious question, and I hope he's not listening, said, now, but the thing I've always wondered about is, how can I tell when something's in the cloud? And I didn't want to say, well, kind of the whole point of it is you don't have any idea when something is delivered when it's delivered well, you don't know the difference.
Right. The CIOs would tell you it's, sort of on-premise versus off-premise.
Yeah.
So, you think about, we've got these servers and they're in this data center, and we either contract out for the data center and we may own the servers, or maybe we use that from the provider as well. But, you know, it's stuff, again, that we feel that we own. So when it's, you know, the user probably wouldn't know. And, you know, I certainly don't know from a GSA perspective what stuff we actually own and what's on our servers versus what we're contracting out for. You know, we're moving to email as a service in GSA using Google with Unisys. And we did that under our Alliant GWAC. So, again, you know, the solutions are in place. Agencies can be ready to go. We're sharing all of our contract information and our templates with other agencies so that they can, you know, easily get to those things. And Dave gave a great example this morning of USAID, was it, that took it?
Yep.
And they're ready to go in a couple weeks because we'd already done all the upfront research and, and looked at terms and conditions. So, yeah, you know, to me, the end user, I really don't know what's sort of, you know, owned on our desktop versus what I'm accessing.
Yeah. The solutions that are in place now, I'm looking at apps.gov right now, and we'll link that up at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth later this afternoon, but put the info link in there too, Dave. The headings across the top, business apps, productivity apps, cloud IT services, social media apps, that's pretty comprehensive stuff. I mean, you've pretty much got in place already what the agencies would need.
There's, what do we call those today? Those are some of the entry-level type applications. So if you think of, you know, wikis or things that make it, I guess collaboration tools is an easy place to start. So, yeah, apps.gov, and we're looking at using apps.gov for all of our cloud solutions to have a cloud store. So, for instance, with the infrastructure as a service BPAs that we awarded and will be ready to use in May after the assessment authorizations are done, those will be available on apps.gov in a cloud store so agencies can directly compare prices from the three vendor bucket lists, if you will, of what they can get through those vendors, what kind of services, and then we're going to, you know, have an easy payment option, you know, whether it's swiping the credit card or providing an agency accounting code, whatever that looks like. But apps.gov we will use to point agencies so they can easily get those services.
Yeah, that's where I wanted to go next is, and we only have about a minute left in this segment, but it looks like the whole point of it has been to make this as easy as possible for the agencies to get this stuff and use it instead of messing around with all of the backstory that we've been talking about.
Yeah. So that's exactly what it is.
Mary Davey and Dave McClure of GSA are my guests talking about the cloud on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you're missing any part of this conversation, you can hear it later this afternoon at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth as we continue talking about the cloud. I want to talk about the people element of this and changing mindsets, because some of the things that are involved here are not just a matter of putting the materials, making these materials available, but getting people to understand you have to change the way you do things a little bit. You have to think differently than you've thought before. So we'll explore that a little bit when we come back on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. It's In-Depth with Francis Rose.
Chris Maurer, CNBC Business Radio. Stocks are mixed. The Dow's up 6 points. The Nasdaq lower by 16. The price of crude is slightly lower. That's despite an escalation in fighting in Libya. There are reports of airstrikes on a strategic refinery town. Right now, oil is trading at $104 a barrel. Shares of IBM are up 5% on the news. Deutsche Bank and other brokerages raised their forecasts for the company's stock price. But shares of Texas Instruments are down a day after the company gave a current quarter earnings estimate below Wall Street forecasts. There was a big spike in mortgage applications last week, but the Mortgage Bankers Association says the increase was driven by investors rather than first-time home buyers. And it was 2 years ago today we saw the beginning of the bull market. The S&P 500 has nearly doubled, and the Dow is back above the 12,000 mark. Chris Maurer, CNBC Business Radio.
Which brings us to the final round. If you are what you eat, then what am I?
Pasta puttanesca.
Correct. Mary had a little lamb. What was its name?
Lamar?
Correct.
Thank you.
What can you now watch instantly with Netflix?
Oh, unlimited TV episodes?
Correct.
Watch
unlimited episodes of your favorite TV shows and movies instantly through your game console or other devices. All for only $8 a month from Netflix. See terms of use.
If you run a business, you've always got decisions on your mind.
Reducing my costs, protecting my people.
Fortunately, Aflac is an easy decision. It lets you enhance employee benefits at no direct cost to your company. Aflac is insurance that pays cash benefits directly. And since it's voluntary, it costs your business nothing.
Better benefits at no cost.
Aflac!
That's what I'm talking about.
Call 1-866-61-AFLAC or visit aflac.com/...
FLIR Systems has a singular focus on providing thermal imaging night vision systems for search and rescue, surveillance, and force protection across the globe. We proudly support the men and women who serve, defend, and protect by providing leading-edge technology to enhance mission success. Today, customers trust in FLIR Systems' thermal imaging products and rely on our responsive support worldwide. Visit FLIR.com/GS for more details. FLIR Systems, extraordinary vision for extraordinary heroes.
I'm not just some tall drink of water, you know. I mean, I wash your dishes, I do the laundry, I help put out fires. I'm always there when you need me, 24/7, at home, at work, just about anywhere. And I'm not expensive, but I have great taste. Well, I guess I am a tall drink of water, but I'm tap water, and that makes me special. For more information about what only tap water delivers, visit drinktap.org.
A newly engineered material may allow waste heat to be turned into energy at unprecedented efficiencies. Put your hand on a light bulb and you'll feel that along with light, it produces a lot of wasted heat. Vinayak Dravid of Northwestern University says he can tap some of that. He helped engineer a material that becomes hot on one side and stays cool on the other, then turns that temperature difference into electricity.
Part of the light bulb could be hugged with this thermoelectric materials and then can be fed back into electrical grid.
Dravid says the material's unique chemistry allows electricity generation at 10 to 15% efficiency.
We are continuing to improve it further, but even at the 10 to 15 of waste heat converting back to useful energy is an absolute paradigm shift.
To find out more about this and other engineering innovation stories, please go to www.nae.edu/radio. That's www.nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Ticked off. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfus with HHS HealthBeat. Sleeping with a pet may be comforting, but it may also put people at risk for getting a disease. Veterinarian Heather Bear Brake of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says the U.S. risk is generally low, but...
The most common risks to pet owners who sleep with their pets include flea and tick bites, ringworm, and skin infections due to mites.
If the pet has those infections, the risk may be higher. The risk is lower if the pet has regular veterinary care, including yearly checkups, vaccination, deworming, and prevention of fleas and ticks. Dr. Bear Brake says young children and people with a weakened immune system should not sleep with pets. Those people find it harder to fight off infections. A study on pets, people, and sleeping is in CDC's journal Emerging Infectious Diseases. Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfus.
The Federal News Radio Community Spotlight is the National Multiple Sclerosis Society. For more than two decades, Walk MS has been the rallying point of the MS movement. Funds raised at Walk MS fund research to find a cure and support vital programs for the many thousands of people living with MS. Come together with your family and friends to declare we are the movement to end MS. Choose one of six different Walk MS sites on April 9th, 10th, and 16th. For more information, visit federalnewsradio.com.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Dave McClure and Mary Davey of the General Services Administration with me for the hour talking about cloud computing. One of the toughest parts of cloud deployment for agencies has been the human element. People are doing things differently. They have to meet some of the cloud requirements that OMB's put out, and just the nature of the technology calls for a different way of doing business. But that's change, and people are generally resistant to change, what have been some of the success stories that you've seen, Dave, at getting people to getting leaders to get their teams to be willing to think differently, to get the buy-in, to demonstrate this is why this is going to be good for you, even though you have to do things differently than you've done?
Yeah, I think it comes back to, you know, showing the positive impact on what it is that you're trying to accomplish in your mission or your business. And if you can organize people's talents and skills and the way you approach even delivering that service in a different way that has a, you know, we're not private sector profit-oriented, but we certainly are impact in the impact business. We want to make sure we're doing a good job providing value to the taxpayers and citizens on what we deliver. And I think that's the key is having the dialogue in that context. And I think the ones that have done it well have rearranged the conversation so that it's not who wins, who loses, mm-hmm. but it's making sure the stakeholder and the end user of your service is gaining from this.
Yeah. The idea of having a winner or a loser seems to be the way maybe too many people in government lead. If we're going to do it this way because I say this is how we're going to do it, and without, in addition to what Dave's talking about the meeting the mission, Mary, also the idea of you personally, your life will be better, your job will be better because we're going to do it this way, and maybe a contractor's going to handle this thing that you're doing now, and you're going to be able to then go on and do this other thing.
Right. Yeah, what I've seen so far, like when we deployed Salesforce, it's almost immediate. So you have, you know, the software program is up, it's running, it's there, you're able to customize it, you know, to an extent that you need it. You're also getting service and support from, you know, the company. But the application is there. It's deployed. There's no development time, you know, because we spend months in government and years developing IT systems and software. And so it's there. It's ready to go. You've got access to your information. You can start using it immediately. And it has just, it's saved a bunch of time and a bunch of money. And then you say, okay, we've deployed this. Is this really what we want to do? And if for some reason it wasn't, you know, then you haven't invested a whole lot in that and you can make changes fairly easy and quickly. But for that kind of application, that's worked great for us. And, you know, again, the cost has been minimal compared to some of the other CRM platforms where you're developing and paying for licenses and trying to, you know, really define your requirements down to, you know, a level of detail you probably don't need to worry about.
Yeah.
So that in GSA has been a great success for me, the end user.
The speed is something that people talk about, Dave, all the time. Is that, I guess, in government could be a little scary because of what Mary said.
We love it.
Well, and a lot of people do, but I imagine there are a lot of people who are used to the 18-month to 5-year cycle for IT deployment that just isn't realistic anymore.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a pressure point in this, the movement in IT to more agile, quick development cycles away from long life cycle. Traditional waterfall requirements, nail them, build, test, you know, going through that. There's still some discipline that's required even in this environment, but I think the world is moving so that technology has to be produced and delivered in much shorter time frames than what we're accustomed to, and in shorter, in smaller chunks. Instead of building the whole thing, let's build it out in modules and deliver value incrementally. Then the CIO can go to the CXO partner and say, something's being done for the money that we're spending. Let me show you what.
Has that been hard to get that, the return on investment piece with cloud computing, or is that pretty easy to demonstrate, do you think?
It normally is. It's like Mary said, I think a lot of it right now is low-hanging fruit. So, you know, moving into a more agile development cycles, delivering solutions so fast, freeing up people's time to do more high-value work, cost reduction because it's just more cost effective. It's pretty quick to show high value impact from most cloud deployments. And again, on the website, you can see where some of the dollar savings have been significant.
These success stories are posted there, and that's one of the things that you'll be able to find when we link that up later this afternoon at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Dave, you mentioned security a little bit earlier, and that's one of the things that had people queasy about cloud computing from the very beginning. Mark Forman said on this show a year or so ago that he thought that at some point there wouldn't be anything secure that needed to be secure in the cloud, that stuff would be kept on local servers. And I wonder if what you think about that, and if maybe what we've learned about cloud computing in the year or so since Mark said that hasn't maybe changed that philosophy just because of how quickly vendors saw if we can provide a secure cloud product, we can make a lot of money.
Yeah. I think it's a combination. You know, we're moving aggressively to tackle cloud security requirements. The FedRAMP process that we'll come out with soon is an attempt to actually define what cloud security requirements cloud service providers have to meet. So I think that'll help resolve some of the situation. But, you know, and going back to Mark's comment, there may be certain data that's of such sensitivity and where the risk involved in its release is such that you really have to tightly control that information. That doesn't mean that's the death knell for cloud computing.
No, not at all.
It just means as a CIO and as a business owner, I need to understand my assets and which ones I can move into more secure, less secure, or it's publicly available data. I might need to protect PII information, personal information, but I mean, I think that's part of the drill we're going through is understanding data better.
Yeah, and that's, to lend some context to his comments, that's pretty much his idea there, too, is that there would be kind of this divining process where you would figure out, just as you're saying, this 90% of what I do, apps, and this data's citizen-facing anyway, and on and on and on, so that can all go out there.
Right.
And the only things that we're going to put out there are things that if somebody breaks in and has access to, it doesn't matter anyway,
right.
And we're only going to keep a close hand on the stuff that we don't want anybody to get to.
Yeah, anymore. And I think as we evolve, you'll see even cloud service providers will be able to take financial data, human resources data, which are sensitive. And as long as we have assurances and they are passing security control testing and continuous monitoring activities that show that that data is secure, it's the same as doing it yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so
those are all the things that you do anyway
exactly.
in your own data center.
Right.
Dave McClure and Mary Davey, my guests from the General Services Administration, talking cloud computing for the hour on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. In Depth with Francis Rose continues in a moment.
In the beloved fairy tale Beauty and the Beast, Belle and the Beast learn that true beauty is found within and live happily ever after. Today, our happily ever afters are being threatened by the fact that nearly one in three children in America are overweight or obese. Now is the time to make good nutrition and physical activity part of your family's daily lifestyle. To learn more, visit letsmove.gov, brought to you by Let's Move, the U.S. Department of Agriculture and the Ad Council.
Do you know someone who has done something outstanding in the field of human capital management? Nominate them for Federal News Radio's second annual Causey Awards. Together, we'll call attention to what may be a best practice in government. Anyone can be nominated. Career, political, and contractors working in the HR field. The award is named after Mike Causey and his lifelong dedication to the reporting of management and federal pay and benefits issues. To nominate someone for the Causey Awards, go to federalnewsradio.com, search award.
This is NIH Health Matters. I'm Joe Belinfi. Genetic analysis points researchers towards a better treatment for alcoholism. Dr. Ray Litton with the National Institute on Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism explains.
To be able to identify patients who respond, say, to a medication, and perhaps even identify those who may have an adverse reaction, will enable clinicians to administer the drug in a more efficient, effective, and safer manner.
Researchers have found that an experimental medication results in reduced drinking, especially in people with certain gene variants. This means genetic screening could help target or personalize treatments for alcohol dependence. For more about this study, visit www.niaaa.nih.gov. Health Matters is produced by the National Institutes of Health, part of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guests are Mary Davey and Dave McClure from the General Services Administration. We're talking about cloud computing, and I mentioned at the beginning of the show that the genesis for this conversation was a message that I saw Mary post on Facebook about going through some training on cloud computing and learning about the cloud and so on. As you've come to understand more about it and you've gone through these training sessions and obviously working next to the great Dave McClure that we have here in the studio, where do you think that line is where, how far down in an organization is it important for somebody to understand or to, and to what degree? Is there like a matrix or something that you,
it sounds
kind of funny, but you could, if you wanted to really get geeky about it, you could plot it.
And bureaucratic.
I didn't want to say that.
Let's have a matrix for who? No. So my genius here was bringing Dave to this session because he is a cloud guy. And my training really is, it's consisted of talking to the smart people, both in my organization and Dave's organization and in industry, that are in this space and can explain it, you know, to people like me who are like, you know, what does this mean? And since I'm responsible for, you know, at the end of the day, sort of the solution that GSA can offer in terms of, you know, basically the contract vehicle or the technical expertise that we're going to provide to agencies, it really made sense from my perspective to understand this and understand, you know, how these things are defined, how agencies would want to buy, you know, the kinds of things they would want to move or maybe not move into the cloud and, you know, the things around the risk and the security. So I really think it comes down to your role in the organization. You know, for me, it's how do we frame an acquisition solution at the end of the day? Really, what are we trying to offer to these agencies and how should we structure these things? If you're an end user, I see it almost as your ability to translate your requirement into what the outcome is you're looking for. What do I need to do my job? And get away from, we've talked about this a bit, you know, the specification of what I want you to buy, CIO, for me. That's not what I should be asking the CIO. It's this is what I need to do my job. Then let them figure out the strategy. And at the end of the day, really we should be letting the industry figure out how to provide that. So we should not say we need 5 servers in this location, although, you know, we do talk about location a bit because of other issues. But it should be, here's what I need, you know, availability, reliability. I want to own or control the data. I want access to it. I want to be, it's portability, whatever those things are. We should be talking about that. So I think it, you know, as Dave said, it kind of comes down to mission outcome and what you need to do to support that mission. And then each person in the agency really is going to have a different level of understanding. Some people really don't need to know or to be familiar with it. But if you're responsible for buying it or defining those requirements, then, yeah, there are different things that you really need to understand in order to make those best buying decisions.
Yeah, I think the concept, you know, of the cloud, and we were talking about this off the air, unfortunately, the term cloud is used, and I suggested we change it to popsicle or something else.
We'll have to start over.
I think the concept of what cloud computing is, that there's a great video on apps.gov, and there's a great video on data.gov. It's kind of like cloud for dummies. You know, what is this thing? What is this? That's pretty easy, actually. Well, it's not necessarily real easy, but where the tough issues are come into play is what we're into now, and that is, okay, how do I buy it? How do I secure it? How do I get off of it? I mean, all the practical pieces of just using an IT solution start coming into play real fast. And that's what we're having to get sorted out in the government domain right now. Because that's, at the end of the day, you've got to answer those questions.
Yeah. You mentioned, Mary, about the talking to the vendors and learning about the solutions. I want you both to weigh in on this. What are they doing well about coming in and informing you and helping you understand, and what are they not doing so well when it comes to providing you with the information that you need to make these decisions?
So far, in my limited time, they've been really good about not giving me the marketing or sales pitch. We talked a little bit about the commercials, and you hear these buzzwords all the time, and it drives me nuts.
Right.
But it's really been very specific. And so one of the things, after I started to learn about this, and we're having some conversations internally around platform, you know, and what do we do with that, and what kind of things would we want to provide with agencies. And so I tweeted, you know, what examples are out there in terms of needs of agencies that would fit in a platform as a service category? And I got some vendors to tweet me back and said, hey, we'd love to come talk to you about that. So they're being very specific about kinds of applications as well as, you know, what they can do to support those.
Mm-hmm. Something I want to do in a couple of weeks, a side note, I want to get you either on the phone or to come back in and just talk about how you're using, personally, mm-hmm. are using social media to do your job.
Oh, good.
I think that you're a terrific example of the productivity that people can accomplish by using these things. That's a great example of it right there.
Have really benefited from like those things enormously.
There are still a lot of people who are of the mindset that this is just a bunch of junk and it's a waste of time. So I think it would be informative to learn more about. There's obviously, in my opinion, there's a strategy about what you're doing on Facebook and on Twitter. And I'd like to explore that with you. Dave, what do you think the vendors are doing well and what could they do better to help you and your people understand what they can do for you?
Yeah, I think, you know, the vendors are certainly the innovators in this space. They're thinking about how this changes their own products and services or how they can design new products and services in the cloud environment. So they're a constant source of, I think, innovation, thinking out of the box, pushing the envelope, asking why can't government do it this way? And that's always refreshing to have. What they could do better is we still have a lot of vendors that are repackaging their old solutions as cloud solutions.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know.
And they think you don't notice?
I might, but other, you know, I think it's doing a disservice if you're not. If that's the marketing pitch, you know, hey, we're cloud,
mm-hmm.
and that becomes the whole marketing campaign, then all we're doing is creating confusion mm-hmm. and everything else in the environment.
So. It's just seems like a new series of buzzwords to replace the old buzzwords
popsicle,
that we're not. Well, there's your solution. There's your solution. But then you'd have to have a creamsicle, and then we'd be back a fudgesicle. Just be right back to where we start now. Dave McClure, Mary Davey from the General Services Administration in studio with me for the hour on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We'll be back to wrap up our conversation in just a moment.
Ticked off. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss with HHS HealthBeat. Sleeping with a pet may be comforting, but it may also put people at risk for getting a disease. Veterinarian Heather Bear Brake of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says the U.S. risk is generally low, but
the most common risk to pet owners who sleep with their pets include flea and tick bites, ringworm, and skin infections due to mites.
If the pet has those infections, the risk may be higher. The risk is lower if the pet has regular veterinary care, including yearly checkups, vaccination, deworming, and prevention of fleas and ticks. Dr. Bear Brake says young children and people with a weakened immune system should not sleep with pets. Those people find it harder to fight off infections. A study on pets, people, and sleeping is in CDC's journal Emerging Infectious Diseases. Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
The FedCloud blog on federalnewsradio.com takes a look at the issues surrounding cloud computing through the eyes of those who are using it every day. We'll share with you the challenges, opportunities, and lessons learned from some of the top minds in the world of federal IT. Collaborate with others and help shape the discussion on cloud computing at the FedCloud blog on federalnewsradio.com or follow the FedCloud blog on Twitter. The FedCloud blog is sponsored by Cisco and Intel.
Do you know someone who has done something outstanding in the field of human capital management? Nominate them for Federal News Radio's second annual Causey Awards. Together, we'll call attention to what may be a best practice in government. Anyone can be nominated. Career, political, and contractors working in the HR field. The award is named after Mike Causey and his lifelong dedication to the reporting of management and federal pay and benefits issues. To nominate someone for the Causey Awards, go to federalnewsradio.com, search award.
I love my husband, but I didn't realize our difficulties had to do with his drinking. Our pastor suggested I go to Al-Anon family groups. I didn't think I would be comfortable, but I decided to try a meeting. The Al-Anon meeting really opened my eyes. Are you troubled by someone's drinking? You might be surprised at what you could learn in an Al-Anon family group meeting from people just like you. Call 1-888-888-888.
888-4-ALANON.
The Federal Managers Association invites all federal managers, supervisors, and executives to its 73rd National Convention and Training Seminar, Federal Managers Turning Policy into Action. On Tuesday, March 15th in Arlington, Virginia, federal managers will gather for engaging presentations including Hiring Reform, What It Means to Managers, The Future of Supervisory Training, and Managing a Telework Workforce. For more details, visit fedmanagers.org. That's fedmanagers.org.
You're listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guests for the hour have been Mary Davey and Dave McClure of the General Services Administration. One thing that GSA has in common with every other federal agency is that you have funding right now through next Friday. And although there are a number of deals talked about and on Capitol Hill, I guess the question is, do you pay attention to what's going on there? And what effect does it have on the way you do business day to day? Dave, you want to start?
Yeah, well, you know, there are lots of impacts from it. One is just put yourself in any situation from a morale perspective. If people are not sure whether they're going to be at work next week or not, or whether they'll have a job next week or not, whether it's a temporary shutdown or a long term, it's just not a great morale environment to be in. And then you have all these mechanical things, contracts, that are in jeopardy as a result of a shutdown, or you can't do contract renewals, or you have to terminate contracts that have cost ramifications to government for doing that. And then a couple other things that we discovered just in the last couple of weeks is, are we ready for a shutdown? You know, have we defined what our exception or essential services are, and when was the last time we did that and mm-hmm. things changed?
Yeah.
And you mentioned this as well, finally, and that is if for every shutdown, you have to have a startup.
Mm-hmm.
So you can not only shut the agency down, you're going to eventually have to start it back up. How do you bring an agency back up? And that's something you have to think through.
And that's not free. I mean, there are operational costs involved in both ends of it, aren't
Absolutely.
There?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Mary, as you think about those kinds of things with your team, what's on your mind operationally?
Operationally for us in the Federal Acquisition Service and parts of GSA, you know, we operate a lot of systems mm-hmm. that agencies use to buy. So whether it's eBuy or FedBizOps or our own task order management systems that interface with industry and other federal agencies, we have to make a determination about which of those systems stay up, you know, as a GSA Advantage, because there will be essential functions where purchases will continue, you know, whether it's DOD in support of the war
mm-hmm.
or what that looks like. So we're trying to figure out, do we have funding to continue to operate those systems so that people can get what it is that they need?
Mm-hmm.
And so those are the things that we run through. Like Dave said, is we're looking at all the functions in the agency, what kind of services we should be providing, and then how do you prioritize those? Because you have to do that based on the anticipated length of this potential period. So what happens in week one? What happens if we go into week two? Then what, you know, what's next on the chopping block?
Mm-hmm. I appreciate that information, because I wonder sometimes from our standpoint as outsiders trying to think about what it is that you are thinking about, I wonder if we don't get a little bit too much, a little too worked up about the idea of a shutdown, and we've got countdowns on the website and all those kinds of things. And that stuff is neat and fun. And I wonder sometimes if that's the way you are thinking about it. And so that's very instructive, I think, to understand what your mindset is. We only have a couple of minutes left on cloud computing. What is it that most people, Dave, do you think don't know at this point in government, whether they're IT people or not, that they should know about cloud computing?
Well, I think from a positive perspective, cloud computing is one of the technological events, if you will, in the life cycle of technology that's coming along that's going to have a big impact on all organizations, public and private. You're changing cost, you're changing service delivery, you're changing the value equation. And I think that's positive. The there's still so much unknown, Francis, about cloud computing. It is still in a very immature state. And so I think we'll learn more from it. I'm very positive. I think there are lots of issues we got to get resolved on security and portability and scalability and things, but just the power of moving to this kind of computing model is really fascinating.
Mm-hmm. It must be great to work with this.
It really is. Look how much I've learned just today.
Glass half full guy.
I know, in the last hour.
All
I'm
the
smarter.
Time. That's fantastic. We're out of time, Mary. I would love to have you come back, as I said, and talk more about your personal social media strategy, because I think it's really cool to be able to connect with you and watch you connect with other people that way. Thank you both for being
Thank
here
you.
Today. What a tremendous amount of fun it's been.